Morning, Happy New Year.
Good morning, Happy New Year. Good to have you back this week. Hopefully a good respite for you, and looking forward to a big 2020.
Absolutely, and I will give you the floor. I always kid you, it seems, every year about this, but explain your rationale when it comes to the ballot.
Well, for me, it's sort of a two-part approach to voting, Steve, because as you mentioned, finalists are determined differently than the winners. Only the first place vote in each category counts toward determining the actual winner. So obviously, I hate to say that I take that more seriously because it's all serious. Being a finalist is important to connections, et cetera. So I don't downplay that by any means. But obviously, the winner is the most valuable. And I try not to get cute or be political or make statements with the first place vote, because that's the one that counts in terms of who gets to raise the statue. The second and third place votes are to determine finalists. And there are times, category to category, where there'll be a pet cause, so to speak. You know, maybe it's an opportunity to say, man, I really like that this owner, you know, like Gary West, I voted third. I know he's taken his lumps. I just think he puts a lot into the game, and he thought he won the Derby for however moments before he probably realized he was getting DQ'd. And, you know, I slotted him third with that in mind. Is he the third best owner, most important owner, most successful owner? Probably not last year, but again, I just thought that was an opportunity, you know, put him in there. He came to mind when I thought owner. That's sort of the two-parter for me is, you know, certain categories, you just have an opportunity when there's an absolute slam dunk for the winner. You know, maybe there's some reasoning to give someone or some horse a mention. And that's not every category. Sometimes you know, like older female for me, Midnight Bizou was a slam dunk regardless of what happened on Breeders' Cup Day. And Blue Prize was going to be second. I mean, she won the Breeders' Cup. I'm not looking to, you know, be too contradictory in categories just for the sake of generating debate. But I do feel like there are occasions where, you know, you can give a horse some credit or a nod to for third or second, knowing that you're not disrupting the vote for actual first. So that's the thought process for me. Category to category, and then the ever popular abstention in the steeplechase, or not so popular with some. I truly feel like it's a different sport. I don't pay attention to it, and I feel like regardless of category, for me it's steeplechase. But I mean, to use an extreme example, let's say for whatever reason you are totally out of touch with the sprinters this year, if you need to use the materials provided by Daily Racing Form to completely fill out your ballot. And I'm not talking about refreshing your memory or making fine line decisions between second and third based on earnings or whatever variable you choose. I'm talking about, man, I need to crack open these PPs and decide who had the best year based on what I see in front of me. You shouldn't be voting in that category. So I don't in that category. But otherwise, overall, I thought top to bottom, at least as far as first place votes go, this was the least controversial year I can remember.
You didn't vote in breeder or apprentice.
Right. Yeah, apprentice is another one. Year to year, I don't. And the reason apprentice I don't, Steve, is a lot of high-quality apprentice jockeys, you know, deciding, mapping out their career, where they're starting out, or in circuits, I don't pay as much attention to. And I don't think it's fair to decide an award based on, oh, this guy or gal won the most races or earned the most money. Because circuit to circuit, that's especially is, you know, you're riding every day or you're hungry, to use a cliche. That's not necessarily the fairest way in my mind. It's really not the fairest way in any of the categories, but especially in apprentice, it just seems like, you know, people default to the most wins. And, you know, on balance, is that probably the best indicator year to year? Maybe. I mean, if you had to pick one, I guess that would be it. But I like to feel like I have a feel for, you know, whether it's riders or trainers or owners, what they're doing with their operation and their career. And I just don't have that in the apprentice category. As for breeder, and I toyed with feeling this way for owner too, to be honest, I'm just sick of the award going to whoever has the most and, you know, whatever category people feel are fashionable at the time. And, you know, if there were a Triple Crown winner, that's sort of an obvious one, or, you know, a breeder set some sort of record. But I just felt like this year I didn't, there wasn't even a group in my mind that sort of came to mind. And I think maybe that could have been an opportunity for me to award an operation I have a lot of respect for that did well. But in the end with breeder, I just feel like, you know, John Sparkman, who I work with at Thoroughbred Times back in the day, our bloodstock editor, he was of the mind that maybe that's a committee type award. Mm-hmm. That, you know, I don't know how I feel about that either, because then it's sort of insider. I probably should have put more work into it and do it, but at the time it just kind of felt like a protest vote against the machine that just votes for the most money.
Well, and I rail against that concept as well, and, you know, kind of some one-dimensional thinking, but it's an area that, you know, over the course of a season that, you know, almost by osmosis, there should be, you know, some feel for, you know, what breeder has had, you know, a particularly strong year. I mean, for me, it must have been around summer and into September when, and then certainly, as James said earlier, you know, I kind of knew early on that Godolphin was my leader in the clubhouse based on just a outlandish number of winners that they were breeding. And in prior years, you know, Hertrick and Fielding have been a bit of a cause celeb for me. They didn't have as big a impact, you know, this particular year. But to me the way to protest is to find somebody that, you know, is very deserving of attention and, you know, and championing them. I mean, that's part of the, you know, that's part of the appeal of being involved in this vote, and also, you know, contributing to Hall of Fame voting and so forth. You mentioned about the, you know, second and third place votes, and I do the same thing where I find, you know, the opportunity to acknowledge and sort of point out that somebody probably doesn't have the sheer number power to win. But, you know, I did this when it came to the trainer this year. I put Richie Baltus third. And Baltus had a spectacular year. And it's, you know, it's not going to shoulder into, you know, Chad Brown, Steve Asmussen kinds of numbers. I did not think Brad Cox kind of sleptwalked through the first third of the year. He did not have a Brad Cox kind of a winter, early spring. And then, you know, kind of got the ball rolling later. So I opted in that direction. So anyway, we always enjoy exchanging these, you know, these ideas.
Well, and on the breeder side, and this is one where I didn't have really a feel, because often it does couple with, you know, some success that kind of sticks out, and then I dig deeper. That's one award, too. I feel like breeder is so much more involved than what happens on the track. And not that, you know, being a good trainer doesn't, you know, involve being good in the barn and owner, et cetera, taking care of your horses. But, you know, breeder, there's breeding to race and to sell. And there's, you know, I remember one year Ken and Sarah Ramsey and some through, oh, you know, you're voting for this guy. He just has a ton of wins. He runs them everywhere. Well, in my mind, that was one of the years where Kitten's Joy blew up. And I felt like that was part of being the breeder. You know, here's a guy that sunk a bunch of his money into building a broodmare band to breed to his sire that now is doing well for everybody. So, yeah, I mean, looking back, there could have been some homework done to, you know, maybe go with that line of thinking and looking at, you know, some breeders who have done well with a particular broodmare band or, you know, a sire roster that wasn't expected to be much. I mean, you know, even looking at the breeder of certain sires, I think, you know, can be germane. If a sire new on the scene is throwing good progeny, is worth keeping in mind.
Well, we'll see where things shake out. And 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks away from handing out hardware. Let's turn our attention to the race action. I do, in maybe next week, Ed, I want you to talk a little bit about Optics EQ that I have caught some of your discussion in recent, you know, over the past month or so. And I want you to talk about I brought up Bet Mix with Jeremy Plonk this week, and he introduced that, and I want you to let people know about the Optics EQ product too. And we can't do it today.
Yeah,
we're going to be short on time, but yeah, I want to hear more about it.
Well, next week would be good. We'll have comp day to look forward to. So
there you go.
Optics will certainly be a part of my handicapping process.
All right. Well, then let's get a couple of opinions. And you probably listened in as Nick and I brought up his hometown track, Sam Houston, with him. And Sam Houston added to the betting menus later tonight.
Yeah, it's certainly a soft spot in my heart and mind, sight of my biggest score. But even absent that, the 12% takeout on multi-race wagers is awesome, and they have a purse increase this year. We've seen what it's done to the field at Turfway, and based on opening weekend, should be similar excitement down there field size-wise and some good wagering opportunities. And I found one, Steve, in race three. This horse is 20-1 on the morning line, and Optics probably wouldn't have been too helpful because it's a first-time starter. Linda Diane, number one, race three at Sam Houston, 20-1 on the morning line. The dam from two starters has a first out winner and a second out winner. Sire New Year's Day is 17% with debut runners. And trainer Alan Dupuy, only 2 for 57 lifetime with debut runners. But one of those two wins did come at Sam Houston last year. And I'm not going to let the bad number talk me off a 20-1 morning line debut runner anyway. So we're looking to light a fuse early at Sam Houston, race three, number one, Linda Diane.
Nice, very nice. The one today, and this race goes off at 8:40 Eastern, 7:40 Central, and maiden group, a full field of 14. Holy cow!
Yeah. Yeah, 36,000, I think. So,
yep, that's the new purse level for the maidens.
And I forget where the purse money came from down there, but
taxes.
They figured something out. And where was it?
It came from anything equine related, all
right.
Tax sales and straw and hay and feed and transportation, any tax monies from equine industry. Funneled in $25 million, half to the quarters, half to the thoroughbreds.
Nice. All right, that's right. I remember that now. Thank you. But, yeah, looking good down there. And, again, 12% takeout. So a 20-1 in one of those first pick four, pick fives certainly could be a nice start to the meet. Another horse I like tonight is Turfway Park. Fans of Stone Temple Pilots may have noticed they dropped an EP today. And Swami Angle, but I like the horse anyway. But race three at Turfway, there's a horse named Stone Temple Pilot who's making his Polytrack debut, and sire Temple City, based on win percentage, best surface is Polytrack. So horse seems to be okay anyway. You get the drop in class to the bottom level at Turfway. You get the Triumph Polytrack for a sire who's better on that surface. Progeny is better on that surface than any other, and you have some early zip, which is essential going 5.5 at Turfway. And hopefully the 4-1 morning line holds, because I definitely think that's a solid price, and actually would probably be happy with 5-2 or 3-1. And that's Stone Temple Pilot in race 3.
Very good. That's the action?
That's the action.
All right. All right. Well, you're probably as good of a person to mention this with. I told everybody yesterday, Tina and I going to Cincinnati tomorrow, and we're doing an overnight. But you're a Cleveland guy, so you can't appreciate this as much. I vowed that the next time my friends, and in particular Doug Wagner and his bandmates, Dave Brown and John Schmidt, that the next time the Warsaw Falcons were playing, that I was coming in. And so I'm taking Tina to Cincinnati. We're going to the York Street Cafe to see the Falcons tomorrow night. And can relive some glory time from the 80s when they played at Corey's and the Dollar Bills and all over Chapter 13. But see, you're a Cleveland guy, so you can't appreciate this.
Yeah. Now, were the menus around in your Cincinnati days?
The modulators, the menus don't ring a bell.
Right. Frank Ames, too, from Chevy, turned me on to them, and they're a ton of fun, and they're actually playing Turfway next week. So, from my experience, when I lived in Lexington, we drive up time to time. Cincinnati, a great bar music, live band town.
Big time, big time.
Very much under the radar from, other cities people talk about. But if there's a band playing, I always took a shot, even with the cover charge.
Well, I was on the list generally, but
where's dinner is my question.
We're not sure yet. We'll discuss that with Doug and Patty, and I've been away a long time from the Natty, I did tell the story that Tina and I coming back from Derby last year and relived at Walt's Hitching Post, which is back and better than ever the last several years. Bill Arnsparger and his partners gave new life to Walt's Hitching Post, which is terrific. And I know it's become more of a steakhouse from its original origins, which were ribs. But I had the ribs, and the ribs are still great. That was great to stop at Walt's. And we may have to make that the... Because the Montgomery Inn closed the one there in Florence.
It did, yeah.
Yeah, so it's funny. I did it all up by feel. And Tina and I got off that exit, and I said, wow, look at this. It's closed. So we got back on 71, and I just looking at the exit ramp, I said, get off this ramp. And I said, go down this hill. And sure enough, there we get to the bottom of the hill, and there's Waltz. And I was like, oh, my God. All right. So we're going to Waltz. It was pretty funny.
Well, I have to tell you, when I was up in Cincinnati for 5.5 months with EJ, and you had recommended Arthur's, and, we didn't get out much, obviously. And when we did, it was quick stops and such. But, that's something I remember, because those respites are so important, just to recharge and not be around that environment all the time. And getting choked up, but
no,
when people took the time to, make sure we had places to go, and it meant a lot, Steve.
No doubt. Listen, everybody, and everybody enjoys watching him grow, a challenge that no parent wants to face, but you guys were champions and a remarkable example for everybody. So, well done.
Well, thank you, and hopefully I'll be back again under better circumstances.
There you go.
A good spot.
Ed DeRosa, everybody, EJXD. Two and the team at Twin Spires and Brisnet. Let's take a break. Mike Welch standing by. We got Welchie, and we've got a visit from Jeff Siegel, coming, and Mary Rampolini on what's been a busy morning. Not the biggest weekend of racing, but plenty to keep us occupied. I'm looking forward to Mike giving us some insights. And, of course, at about 3:30, 4 o'clock, he'll drop the clocker report. And that'll be a big help, particularly for a lot of these first-time starters. I mean, that fourth race, 8 out of the 9 are firsters. Third race, too, the mile race, there's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 3 firsters. And a bunch of firsters actually in the first race, too. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the 9, of the 10 are firsters. So we need Mike Welch. He's going to join us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at Horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the 5 Kentucky Tracks for Horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I'm talking people about the same old game. They're running them numbers and the winners have the shame. Loaded and the deck is stacked. The
We're back at the races, 25 minutes into hour three on the weekend preview, and it was a busy week leading into Saturday's action at Gulfstream. Mike Welch of the Daily Racing Forum joins us. Mike, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Steve.
Mike, tragic week, actually, and in fact, if we go back to even before New Year's, there was the flooding on the backstretch, which was just stunning, and we didn't get a chance to talk about that before we went on break. Then this week, I could tell by your sensitive tweet that George Navarro was inconsolable over XY Jet's cardiac incident that claimed his life.
Yeah, I mean, I heard a rumor of it in the morning here while I was clocking, and I just didn't want to call George right away until I knew it was true. And then when I did find out it was confirmed, I gave him a call, and he was inconsolable, was the word. I mean, he just could barely speak. He was so broken up. After a couple of minutes, it was it was obvious that he couldn't even go on. He just loved that horse, you know. I mean, and like you said, he put him where he was. He put him on the map. He meant everything to him. Just besides what the horse did for him, George truly just loved the horse. I spoke with someone who was actually in Dubai with George last year, leading up to and during the Dubai World Cup. And, you know, they told me that you just see, you know, George just spent his entire time, you know, with the horse, around the horse, just doing everything he could for the horse, and was rewarded with the victory last year. And unfortunately, not going to get a chance to go back there again this year. But the horse was tremendous, $3 million in earnings, won one Dubai World Cup, second in two others, and overcame all sorts of injuries. George did an unbelievable job. The word patience is a virtue. Patience was a virtue with that horse, and George, displayed all of that to get him through what he had to get through and to keep him at a level, world-class sprint level.
And that's what's remarkable. I mean, because, and granted, sprinters, sprinters with issues, quote unquote, the time to bet them, and when they come back off of a layoff, a lot of times they'll retain, that they get back to that level. But he did it three times. I mean, it just speaks to, it speaks to Cantheros as a stallion, and this horse, with maturity. I mean, he never, each time he came back, he absolutely was as fast and as strong as he was, previously. It's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, even his last race. No, he finished last, but the opening quarter and half mile, George actually said to me, "This horse looks like he's getting faster as far as his speed went, his early speed went." And that kind of speed is always an asset when you're running in races like the Dubai World Cup, which is a straightaway. And he was looking forward to going back, even though his first race back was a disappointment. It was at 7/8, and it was a race he really needed under his belt. George didn't have any real high expectations, but he was looking forward to running back at the Sunshine Millions and, then going to Dubai from there. So, unfortunate all around.
Well, and, he missed virtually, his entire five-year-old season. I mean, he was gone from November from the performance in the De Francis Dash, where he ended his four-year-old season third behind Ivan Fall and Novalot. And he did not return until the Mr. Prospector of 2017. So he virtually missed 11, almost 13 months, 13 months, really. And, then came back second to that, the Mind Your Biscuits. I mean, that was as excruciating a beat as anybody's going to take. Then he came back and was off another 6 months between the Smile win, and then he came back for the Sunshine Millions and had the opportunity to prep twice before going back to Maidan. And this time he wins and wins clear. XY Jet, very, very tough. Meanwhile, you have been tracking and keeping everybody up to date on Omaha Beach, and we had talked, Mike, to Dick Mandela on Monday, and he said he was going Wednesday for the workout, and then the word came that the workout was going to be scuttled. But yesterday I saw where, you know, you said he came out and he galloped, and it looks like he's okay.
Well, he jogged yesterday. It was just a jog alongside the pony, but he looked fine. This morning he went out somewhere around 6:30. If you haven't been to Gulfstream Park when it's dark, it's not like being at Churchill Downs at 5:36 in the morning before, you know, during Derby Week or whenever, because they have the lights there. There are no lights. There are a couple of lights on poles here and there, but it's really hard to see anything much in the morning. The clockers here do an absolutely amazing job clocking these horses, because it is total darkness until almost 7 o'clock here at the moment. And, in, you know, we were sitting up in the stand watching the track, and we saw a horse come by us, and by the time he got by us, we weren't able to see the markings on his face because he was by us. But from the saddle towel and just the looks of the horse, I was pretty sure that was him. And if it was him, he looked fine galloping this morning, too. So that news is good. I spoke to Richie Mandela yesterday. He said he wanted to get at least 2 days of gallops in. Maybe work Sunday, maybe work Monday. So nothing, he's not committed to either day yet. He does want to get two works in a year before the race, and should be able to do that if he has no more setbacks. And if he works on Monday, I imagine he'll be able to come back the following Sunday or Monday with another work. So hopefully everything will go well, and we'll see him breathe sometime over this weekend or Monday at the latest.
Meanwhile, Mike, the question has got to start to be asked with some of the bigger names like Maximum Security, McKinsey, Math Wizard, and Giftbox seemingly pointing toward the Middle Eastern race. This group is a little bit under duress, is it not? What are they thinking about with the main track Pegasus race? In terms of a
field?
Well,
right now there's about 10 horses, I think, on the probable list. And, you know, after Omaha Beach, you know, you do have Higher Power, Magic Wand, Mr. Freeze. He'll have a couple more works. It looks like he's heading that direction. Roadster, Seeking the Soul, has been confirmed. Spun the Run is down here training, trying to make sure he can train through the Nolesix situation that he's going to have to be faced with. Trainer Juan Carlos Guerrero seemed a little concerned about that. They were going to breeze him, or have been breezing him, without LASIK so far. It seems so good. I did not talk to him after his second work. He seemed fine after his first work. Tax supposed to go. War Story, another horse with some bleeding issues. I know LASIK could be problematic for him. And Diamond Oops, also Patrick B. and Cone. This horse loves this racetrack. This would be a big step up in class and then stretching them out. But you know, that looks like the group about now. I think Bodie Express, even though he was not invited, will eventually be invited if they don't come up with 12 from the original invitees, which it doesn't look like that's going to happen. They're going to fill out those two spots, and I think Bodie Express will probably be invited in. He was going to have a work yesterday, and they decided instead to two-minute lick him, and they're going to bring him back and work him next Wednesday is the situation with him. So that's where we stand right now. Looks like 9 or 10 confirmed, and I'm guessing they will fill out to a full dozen, though, before they draw those entries a week and a half from now.
So, essentially, there is the potential for some horses, when you mentioned Bodie Express, and in fact, our friend Chad Schexnader down in New Orleans wondered aloud on Twitter today why a horse like Tom's de Tot might not have been queried about participating. So there is.
I think Al Stone was pretty firm in the fact that he was passing this race with that horse.
Originally.
I don't think he wanted originally, yes. Now, I haven't heard anything more. I mean, I don't know why he would not have been invited if there was any thought that he could come. Maybe they will reach out to him. Like I said, they want to fill out a full field at 12, and if there's not 12 from the original 17 invited, they will look to grab a couple of others for the race. So I haven't heard anything about Tom's de Tat. Jay Cribman, who made out a pretty detailed confirmation list a couple of days ago, did not have his name on that list. So if there's any movement in that direction, I haven't heard about it.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll keep tabs coming days as the card inches closer. And, of course, a full slate of action. And, Mike, before we dive into a couple of spots about this card, what's your feeling about the viability of Chancet and as seen on TV going forward here? I talked to Safi Joseph on Monday, and he thinks he'll be okay up to a mile and an eighth. He's not guaranteeing anything beyond that. But what are your thoughts about these two?
I thought the race was terrific. Not only did they put on quite a show, but you know, these two horses ran the whole way. I mean, they were still running despite you know, that head to head duel. They still had something left at the end. It was a remarkable effort on the part of Chancet coming off the four-month layoff. You know, as we had noted, I think we had talked, and certainly from the Clocker report, you could see that he had trained spectacularly going into the race. But Safi, you know, you never know. No matter how good a horse trains, coming off a layoff like that, if they're not going to be a little bit short, you know, in a racing situation. And he certainly dug down, was passed through most of the stretch, you know, and fought back along the rail. Under Tyler, a great ride by Tyler there, getting through on the inside. And, you know, give Kelly Breen a lot of credit, too. I mean, his horse had never been beyond 6.5 furlongs, stretching out to a mile for the first time. He was very confident that he would be able to get that far. But, again, same thing. You never know until they do it. And he did it. And they got buyers in 93 and 94. And I'm thinking maybe the way way they looked, the way they were finishing, that performance might even have been a little better than that. So the main question would be coming back in the Holy Bull in 4 weeks off that kind of a gut-wrenching stretch run, you know, will they be able to come back and be able to duplicate that performance stretching out again around two turns for the Holy Bull? That's the question that has to be answered. And, you know, awaiting them down the road for the Holy Bull, is Tiz the Law, who is, you know, going to have the fact that he's not run here and has been away on the negative side, but who's plenty talented, seems to be training well since he's gotten down here. He's had two works up at Palm Meadows, and he'll have the chance to get a couple more in before the race. So if you got those two, Tiz the Law, Ette Indienne is supposed to run for Patrick Biancone, coming off a very impressive allowance win here. And after that, I'm not sure, really. We haven't had any real other confirmations that I know of, but those four for sure would be a pretty good show right in itself.
Well, undoubtedly some others will materialize, and in fact, we might get some that come out of the race, to the 2 mile races tomorrow. Two divisions of colts and geldings going a mile, two divisions going six furlongs, Mike. We're going to be looking forward to the release of the Clocker report later this afternoon to really dive into this. Among the entrants, how about the sibling of Little Mike for Carlo Vacareza, who I thought had retired from training?
No, he had threatened to, but no, Carlo's still out there, and he's had a couple of horses run well. He's had a couple of unfortunate occurrences over the last week where horses of his looked like they were making winning runs or whatever and got impeded through the stretch. And the last one the other day, the maiden race on Sunday, looked like he was going to get put up and placed at least second after he got bothered badly by the Mike Maker horse nearing the wire, and the stewards didn't see it that way. But, you know, he's had some horses run well, and, of course, Militarist is one of them. And he's coming off a big 7/8 effort behind a Premier Star, who was a well-meant, thinking of the right one, George Navarro, first-time starter. It looks like stretching out will be what this horse wants for Militarist. So I think he's got a real big chance in there. But, you know, all of these maiden races have some very promising-looking first-time starters. I think each race has one for Todd Pletcher, if I remember correctly. All of them seem to be working well up at Palm Meadows, and we do have at Palm Beach Downs. We do have all those reports from Dave Norton in the Clocker report on those horses and others from, you know, from other prominent barns as well. So it's a real good card. Even the two stakes races aside, you also have an allowance race later in the card that's got this graded stakes caliber field. It's really a tremendous race, and led by Endorsed for Kieran McLaughlin, making his first start since the Travers. And also Todd Pletcher has Cutting Humor, making his first start since the Kentucky Derby. You know, that's the kind of stuff you get here at Gulfstream in January and February. You know, those kind of horses, along with the up-and-coming three-year-olds, you get those kind of horses coming off layoffs, returning and starting their next campaigns in allowance races. And a couple of them have come together here, along with a full and quality-laden field right from top to bottom there.
Well, you mentioned that race with Endorsed and Cutting Humor. That's the ninth, and there's a three-year-old allowance race as well, Mike. And I do note that you tabbed a horse that we discussed on Monday with Safi Joseph, who has taken over the training of New York Traffic, NY Traffic. And there's going to be, you know, plenty of focus in that spot on Moon Over Miami for Bill Mott and Jane Lyon, coming off the impressive maiden win at 9-1. But Safi talked pretty glowingly about New York Traffic when the name came up on Monday.
Yeah, well, you'll see when you get the clock and report. I'll give you a little hint there. This horse has been training exceptionally well, and you know, we've been kind of waiting to see where he would show up next, and here he is. Now, he's never been two turns, never been beyond 7/8, so that's the question you have to answer. But the way Safi's been going, and the, you know, way he's been producing for a while now, you know, not just last weekend with those three stakes wins, you have to figure this horse is going to be, you know, ready to roll. He gets a little bit of a post position break over Moon Over Miami. Mile and a 16th, you know, the further out you draw, the tougher it could possibly be. Moon Over Miami drew the extreme outside post. He does have Johnny B, and Johnny B knows this track well, and the nuances of those short runs of the first turn, mile and a 16th and mile and an 8th races, and what you need to do to keep yourself in a winning position. So it'll be interesting to see how this race plays out. It looks like Soonyan for Brian Lynch is going to be the speed. I think New York Traffic is going to stalk him right from the start. Lure Him In might show a little speed for Ralph Nix, stretching out around two turns. Actually, the only horse in the field with two-turn experience, I'm looking at Genghis, but that was two turns on the grass. The only one with two-turn experience on the dirt is Soonyan, who was second, beating the neck, going a mile and a 16th at Churchill Downs. So some big question marks here, but, you know, I'm thinking maybe we'll see another one or two potential down-the-road three-year-old prep contenders in here. I don't know if anything is going to jump out of here and go into the Holy Bull, just because it's only if you don't have much time to recuperate from here to get to the Holy Bull. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, what does come out of this race and those two three-year-old mile maiden races. There's also two three-year-old, six-year-old maiden races. I don't know if we're going to see any Derby kind of horses coming out of those races, but certainly the mile maiden races, I'm sure the winners there will be looking at something, whether it's here, Tampa, or who knows on the Derby trail.
Well, and there are, you know, you mentioned some that might be bred to very quickly stretch out off of debuts, and I do want to point out at least one pedigree note. Bear Alley, the one horse in the first race for Dale Romans tomorrow, West Point and Albaugh, and a $525,000 Keeneland Yearling that's a half to Maraud and Arklow. So not necessarily a dirt sprinter, but he's a will-take-charge out of an Empire Maker mare, and who knows what's going on here. You know, some modest works. Actually, there's a couple that hint at some talent, including a 48-4 gate work, 48-1 half mile. This horse is cut out to be something, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, definitely looks like down the road, distance and turf will be what he wants. I don't think this is going to be the spot for him. I've seen him work here a couple of times. He's just been okay on the dirt in his local works. It looks like he showed a little more speed, like you said, over at Churchill before he shipped locally. But, you know, you got some interesting also. You also have a silver ratio for Todd Pletcher, who may ultimately want the turf, looking at his pedigree, and Liam's maps aren't necessarily your first out debut sire kind of prolific kind of, you know, debut horses, but the horse below him, Guaco by McLean's Music, out of the Princess Ruby, River's Prayer, looks like a horse that could be pretty contentious. Haven't seen him work. Now, he's over at Gulfstream Park West, but Gustavo Delgado can certainly have one to win on Luis Saez there, so you know he's well meant. You have Awaken for Suge McGahey. He's a half to a couple of turf winners also that maybe, you know, means this horse down the road is going to want grass. Sag Harbor, I think, is going to run better than his debut for George Navarro. And then you have Mr. Philly Dilly, who for Ben Perkins, who wound up catching a loose on the lead winner in a key race, has already produced two next out wins, including the winner who came back and won allowance race of Laurel. That was for 40, but they might have got away with one there. He's stepping up to the stuff made special weight category, but there could be the one to catch himself in this spot if he leaves there running. T. Will also has shown some speed for Juana Villa in the morning, too. So the first race is just a hint of what's to come on this card. It's tough, it's competitive, and it's probably going to produce some horses down the road that we're going to hear from as we get further and further along into the winter meet.
Well, as we get further along, we'll check in with Mike, and Marty McGee will be down there as well, and the
Marty
team
is here.
Marty's on hand. Great. So you got some support. And, of course, Dave Norton up at Palm Beach Downs to help out, and Palm Meadows works.
David
and,
Harris, yeah. David and Dave both been, Donald Harris and Dave both been doing a tremendous job already, and we're not even halfway into the meet, so a lot to look forward to as far as the Clocker Report, too, the rest of the winter. We've already had some pretty good stuff, I think, on there, especially in a lot of these maiden races and, you know, nice-looking allowance races on the turf and dirt, so a lot more to come, that's for sure.
Well, Mike, we'll check in next week, and good luck this weekend. And, of course, the Clocker Report, look for it later this afternoon. Get the, you can buy it by the individual, by the weekend, by the whole rest of the meet. Plenty of action yet, January, February, March.
Yeah, if you don't subscribe to it on a whole meet basis or even a weekly basis, a card like Saturday's is one you probably want to,
absolutely,
you know, spend the $12.95 or whatever. I'm not sure what they're charging now for a single copy. But with all those maiden races and horses coming in from every which way here, I think it's probably worth the investment if you're a serious player, or even if you're a casual player looking at
absolutely
a great card like this one.
Absolutely. And here, I'm going to tell you exactly. $12.95 is right for a single card, $49.95 for the week, and well, the full meet was originally $6.50, and you missed December at this point, but
they might come out with another opportunity to purchase the rest of the meet at a, obviously not at the $600, but a reduced price. Probably a good idea. I'll have to discuss it with my people. So I don't pay attention to the prices. I do get mine for free.
Well, that's because you wrote half of it. Mike Welch, everybody. DRF Welch. Mike, talk next week. Thanks so much.
Okay, Steve.
We're going to stay right here because Jeff Siegel is standing by, and he joins us now. Jeff, Happy New Year.
Same to you. Everything's great here. How about you?
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, certainly, you know, talked to John White earlier in the week, and the decision to postpone the opening day ended up being prescient, and it paid off. A fabulous opening day Saturday, the 28th at Santa Anita, and, you know, feels like there's some real normalcy at this point moving forward.
No question about that. I think that was obviously was a good decision. It did rain pretty hard on the scheduled opening day. Next year, December 26th date actually falls on a Saturday. I know they would prefer to open on a Saturday anyway, and so they will do that next year, assuming everything, you know, they don't have any postponements next year. And then I think from then on, I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, officially opened on Saturday, no matter what day it actually falls on. I know traditionally
Interesting.
They used to always used to open the day after Christmas. But I think from a business standpoint, opening on a Saturday makes a lot of sense.
Well, this Saturday, looking at this card, and we'll get a couple of pushes from you. But before we do that, I wanted to get a couple of thoughts about your Eclipse ballot. And if you felt that there were certain areas that were tougher than you expected, how'd you shake out on your ballot?
I don't think there were too many disputed categories. I think that you have to look at the two-year-old male is gonna be closer than I think people think. I voted for Storm the Court just because I'm partial to the Breeders' Cup Juvenile winner, assuming there is no other standout for any extenuating circumstance. I don't know whether Storm the Court was the best two-year-old last year, but he did show up on the right day, and I give him credit for that. And you know, I think he deserves it. I know Structure is going to get some action too, undefeated. But all things being equal, I'm going to prefer the dirt over the turf in a two-year-old division. I think there's just more competition in the dirt division. So for me, Storm the Court, I saw him train last week. I think he's going to be a really good three-year-old, better maybe than I originally thought. He looked really good. Breeze 5/8, looked like he'd filled out a little bit and did it the right way. And I'm not sure when he's going to make his three-year-old debut. It could be in the San Vicente in the second week of February. They might wait until March, but he's okay. I mean, he's a good colt, one of many, many that are out here right now that I have high hopes on, and I'm curious to see how he comes back. I also want to mention that last week I thought Authentic just blew my mind. I mean, he's, you know, green as grass, doesn't know what he's doing, but I think he is a really, really good colt, good, long, scopy, athletic colt for Bob Baffert, and undefeated now in two starts, and winning the Sham did it with a good number. And you know, I mean, when he figures out what he's supposed to do, look out for Authentic. He could be the goods.
Well, there's no shortage, and of course, we're waiting for 1,000 Words to come back. We've got... I guess Honor AP seems like Sheriffs is dealing with some issues, but no doubt by the time we get to the Lewis and the Felipe and you know, start to really march toward the Santa Anita Derby, the big guns will come blazing.
No question. It's going to get interesting here, as it will back east. Wide open really this year. I mean, there some nice colts out there that are in a different stages of development. So,
exactly.
And I'm sure there's some new shooters out there as well. I getting back to the ballot, though, Maximum Security, I think, will be champion three-year-old. Probably Bricks and Mortars will be Horse of the Year, although I would like to see Maximum Security win Horse of the Year. I don't think he will. To me, he did it. He did it the right way. He did it against 3-year-olds, but he did it at a mile and a quarter. He did it sprinting. He was good throughout the entire year, and I like him, so I'll vote for him. I'm not sure he'll win.
I love it. What'd you do with older male? I'm curious. We've been having all week a Vino Rosso Mattoli discussions.
Yeah, I went with Vino Rosso. I'm an old school guy. I like the winner of the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I thought that's the championship race. I mean, Mattoli's going to get his Eclipse Award. He'll get the sprint, so it's not like he's empty-handed or anything like that. But I just think that the way our racing is set up, that unless there's something extraordinary outside of Breeders' Cup Day, that I'm gonna look at the Breeders' Cup Classic, and it wasn't like he lucked into it either. I mean, he went with complete authority. I'm a big fan of his, so I'm gonna put him there.
You know, the more we talk to people, Jeff, I did the same thing. That vote is going to be incredibly interesting and close, I think, because there's a lot of people. I mean, everybody, I think, obviously Mattoli is going to be an acclamation sprint winner, and he's a finalist for Horse of the Year, but the Vino Rosso Mattoli thing, it really feels like the scale has tipped toward Vino Rosso, from what I can tell from conversations.
Well, that's what I would go. Now, Mattoli, you'd think that because he's a finalist for Horse of the Year, that would automatically give him the edge because Vino Rosso is not a finalist for Horse of the Year. But I guess you could, you know, if you weren't, you know, committed to Mitoli in the Horse of the Year division, and I don't think he's going to win that, I guess you are free. You're freed up to vote for Vino Rosso for Older Dirt Mail, and yeah, I wouldn't be upset either way. But I mean, they both rose to the occasion on the biggest day of racing, and Vino Rosso won the Classic, so that's where I go.
Interesting. All right. Well, what'd you do? What'd you do for some of the human spots?
You know, I didn't really get too involved in that. I mean, I was kind of disappointed—not disappointed, but I was. Not surprised, really, that it's all Eastern-based, Castellano, Irad, Jose. I mean, what's, you know, pick one. I mean, Chad Brown is my default go-to trainer, I guess. Why not? I go for that. You know, I mean, I tell you one other division I do want to mention, though, and that is Uni and Got Stormy. And, again, I default to the Breeders' Cup mile. They've both beaten each other. They both have remarkable records. But for female turf horse, again, I go to the championship race. Mm. So I go to Uni. I wouldn't knock anybody who wanted to go the other way. But that's where I go.
Well, I appreciate the insights, and let's get a couple of quick opinions. We've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. Some thoughts about the card tomorrow, Santa Anita, Little La Cienegas, and La Cañada.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The La Cienegas has an import from Brazil named Jolie Olympica from Richard Mandela's barn. She is an August foal, which means, of course, she was bred on Southern Hemisphere time, so she's like 3.5 years old, but comes in undefeated. Not the strongest field in the world, just 5 going. Storm the Hill will get a lot of play because she's backing up to her best distance, but I'd like to see Jolie Olympica go out and do something special for Mandela. We need a fresh face in that division, and I think she might be pretty good. This is Fox Hill Farms. They don't, you know, it's not, you don't get too many Brazilian horses. They're well scouted, and this one to be here must be pretty good. And 3 for 3, all 3 went away wins. So we'll see how she performs in the third. That's the La Cienegas. And then La Cañada, you know, Spice Perfection, I don't really know whether she, I don't think she wants to run a mile of 16th. I mean, she can run a one-turn mile, but this is a 2-turn race, so it'll be interesting to see. She's far the best on paper, whether she can get the trip, I don't know. She's 5 years old. She's had 20 starts. She's seasoned enough to try to get it. Queen BDU is not as good, but she's proven around 2 turns, and if, for whatever reason, Spice Perfection doesn't quite get the mile in 1/16, then I think Queen BDU will be there to pick her up.
Anything else on the card that caught your eye?
Not yet. I'll dive into that tonight. A lot of overnight races, some tough maiden races on the turf that I'll be looking at. Got to do some research on those. But we'll have our analysis, our full card analysis and wagering strategies on XBTV.com, also SantaAnita.com, and then ExpressBet.com. So there are plenty of ways to find it. And we'll have it up probably early in the morning tomorrow.
Excellent. Day Makers, of course, as well, and all the great coverage. Millie Ball, speaking of XBTV, Millie Ball, the Beat the host tomorrow. Make sure you can't sweep the host if you don't play week 2 after Jeremy started things off. When are you up in Beat the Host?
A little bit later on down the road. I'm not exactly sure of the date, but they'll let me know when I'm on. And when I'm on, I'll be ready.
Yeah, you always are. Always one of the toughest weeks for everybody facing off against Jeff Siegel. And you follow Jeff on Twitter, too, J. Siegel Racing, and all the great coverage at XBTV.com. We thank Jeff, and we'll talk next week. And we'll head off into the weekend. Best of luck to everybody playing. I apologize to Mary. We didn't get to Mary Rampolini, but we did talk some Sam Houston Race Park, and we'll get Mary in ahead of their big day in a couple of weeks. Sorry, Mary. Thanks to Hammer, though, and James Scully and Nick Tamaro, Ed DeRosa, Mike Welch, Jeff Siegel, Deja on the board. Back with you Monday, of course. Look for you tomorrow in Cincinnati while we make a quick zip to the Queen City. Looking forward to that. And look forward to talking to you on the weekend. I'll see what I'm going to do the Gulfstream. That's what I looked at the most, I think. I'll look at that. That's a little tricky. It's tricky, but I thought late in the pick 5. the 9th and 10th. So, and we'll see if Gus, maybe see what Gus has got for you over the weekend, too. Visit the website. Thanks, everybody. Good luck.
Killing all the bees.